Hey, Dad.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What's up? So I had a thought the other day about nepotism.
Okay.
And nepotism typically has a negative connotation to it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think you and I both agree that that's wrong. That now I guess you know what we should probably define exactly what nepotism
is. Yeah, I think
that
would probably be pretty good.
I'm going. Let me look. Go to the seeker of all truth here, Google. So nepotism, the practice among those with power or influence of favoring relatives, friends, or associates, especially by giving them jobs. I remember when I first got into ministry, you were very terrified of looking like nepotistic, bringing me onto the church staff. And it was the board that said to you, bring Joel on.
Yeah.
And ever since then, you've kind of had a shift in mindset about, let's not call it nepotism, but passing on leadership to your family members,
family members
that are ready for it.
Yeah. I guess, part of it was, you know, I didn't want to look like I was favoring you or anything like that, or Jonathan or anything like that. But when I asked him, I said, well, you know, isn't that kind of wrong? And one of them said, no, he's the most qualified person for the job. Give it to him. Oh, okay. So I think that would be my, caveat regarding nepotism. If the person is qualified, if they obviously are not qualified, if they obviously have not proven themselves and you're just giving it to them because it's my cousin Louie or whatever, then that's a different situation.
Because you're the big guy?
Yeah, yeah. Unless he's got his other cousin Louie's threatening to throw you in the river or something.
You're the big guy that the kickbacks go to, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. So that's sort of I just got that. Okay. So
I could tell you didn't get my joke.
Yeah, I did not get the joke. Okay. I'm not that politically motivated. If you're just doing it because, you know, the kickbacks, or you're doing it because, you know, you're going to make your wife happy or something, and they're not qualified for the position, then you're hurting the whole program. You're hurting the whole thing. But you see, it's actually a very biblical thing. You know, I mean, who, of course, in a kingdom, who was to become the next king after David? Solomon, after Solomon, Rehoboam. And so, you know, their sons became the next king.
Here's an example, though. If you look, everything deteriorates down when it's given to a son, even with some of the priests.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that was kind of the deal with the, when you're talking about a kingdom thing, that's the way a kingdom works. And so the king, whether he's qualified or not, but you would hope that. And, you know, again, here's the deal. Solomon started out great. I mean, he really did. He started out extremely humble. What went wrong? And, man, that's a whole parenting issue we could talk about, you know, because it seems like David had brought him up well.
I think he had it too easy.
Well, I think so, too. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was saying, you know, maybe we're talking to you about that, how enemies have a purpose.
Yeah.
That David, many of the Psalms were written out of his angst and out of his fear and out of his struggles with his enemies. Some of the greatest Psalms were written. Whereas Solomon, as soon as he came into power, he was able to defeat all his enemies and drive out all the enemies. And then he had luxury the rest of his life, and he ended up falling and falling away from the Lord. So the purpose of enemies is to keep us dependent upon God and crying out and desperate for the Lord and for his protection and for his presence with us.
So, that is an interesting thing, because too, like when you were talking about that job for me, I had established myself.
Yeah,
I had gotten a degree. I had started my own leadership thing, ministry leadership stuff. It wasn't, you know, David, my mentor David, he used to always tell me, he said, Joel, a giant oak never grows in the shadow of another giant oak. The acorn falls and it has to like step away from the oak to grow another. And he said, you're going to have a hard time if you stay under your dad's covering and don't build something on your own, because your dad's a giant oak. You've got to become your own giant oak. And I took that really seriously. And I mean, it wasn't like I was running from working with you, but I realized I needed to, I don't even think he would have had to say that to me, but it kind of put words to what I felt anyways. I have to establish myself. And I think that's the danger of nepotism, is when you don't feel like you have to establish yourself because dad's going to hand it to you on a silver platter.
Yeah. You know, there's actually a scripture where it talks about when you go into the land, talking to the people of Israel who had been through the wilderness, and the Lord says to him, he says, now when you go into the land, you're going to live in houses you didn't build. You're going to drink from wells you didn't dig. You're going to eat from vineyards you didn't plant, and blah, blah, blah. And he says, be careful that you don't discard the Lord, that you continue to fear the Lord, because it's all been given to you. You didn't fight the battle for this land. And it's so easy to step into a situation and be critical of where it is and the way it is and everything, because you don't know the history of it. Yeah. You don't know what battles were fought to get to where we are right now. And so, yeah, I think it is important that you're doing your kids a disservice if you're just giving it to them without them having to earn it and without them having, and that goes for anything in life, really. You know, they're not going to really value it because they've not fought the battle. And that's what he was saying. And that's what he's saying here too. You had established yourself. Jonathan, same way. He had established, he had done some things and he was kind of new, but he came in and yeah. So it wasn't just because, oh, here's my son, you know, he needs a job, we'll give it to him.
Which, I mean, that's an interesting element too, because I also talk to a lot of guys who they run from doing what their father did.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I think there's an element of, and I'm working on a book about this, it's this huge lofty concept, but this idea that God often calls on us to complete the work of our father.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Terah and Abraham, Terah was probably called to go to the promised land, but it says he stopped short in Haran. I don't know if it was because he lost a child or whatever, but he stopped the journey. Abraham in his old age, God says, I want you to complete this. I want you to go to the promised land and you get to be the beneficiary of the promise. Now, again, theologically, was Abraham the one that was chosen? I don't know. Did Terah not complete it? But there's this idea that oftentimes we're called to complete the work that our father started. And many times it's a very, there's this kind of archetype that you see that the man runs first of all from the calling to be like, to follow in his father's footsteps. And then eventually life circumstances pushes him back into Luke Skywalker, right?
Yeah.
Got the force within him, doesn't realize it. His father, Darth, used it for evil. And then he goes and ends up using the force to rescue us. Anyways, it's this huge theme. And oftentimes I've talked to a lot of leaders whose fathers were a big deal, you know, in some organization. And they've pushed away from that, but ultimately they found themselves gravitating back to it. And I think, I mean, you believe God wastes nothing. And I mean, I think about me. I ended up being in ministry and serving in missions. Yeah. And I grew up kind of understanding how the world works of missions and ministry. And I think that's how I've managed to survive so far. If you can keep your heart pure, you can survive in ministry. But there's this element of you don't want to waste. I heard Andy Stanley say that one time. He said, man, I'll take a pastor's kid who's less qualified over somebody who's got all the qualifications and education, because a pastor's kid just gets it. And if he's still in the church, he understands how this thing, this monstrosity called the church works. And there's a value in completing the work of your father because you've just been raised to understand how the stuff works.
Yeah. How the stuff and how people work, how volunteers, because in the church, it's mostly a volunteer organization. And so people are different than if you're paying them to come here to do this job. You know, you've got to coordinate a bunch of volunteers to get a really ethereal mission accomplished. You know, we're here to spread the love of Jesus. Well, did you spread the love of Jesus this week? We tried. We don't know. How do you measure that? You know, you can measure. We either made money or lost money. You can put it on a graph. You know, you can chart it. You can look at the bank account. How do you measure whether you're accomplishing the Great Commission or whether you're discipling people for Jesus? You know, it's like, well, I thought he was a disciple, and then look what he did this week. So it's a very ethereal mission, too, that the church has. It's a whole other thing.
So how do you know if a leader is truly a son, daughter, is truly deserving of the position, or if it is nepotism? I mean, what would you say, would you think are some of the signs that like, yeah, this is a little concerning that this may be more nepotism than an actual sign of a true leader?
Yeah, you're talking about if you're looking at it on the outward or if I'm the father trying to decide if I should hire my son?
Go with both.
Okay, because if I'm, you know, the father trying to hire the son, I'd say you may just have to give it a shot and try it. I mean, obviously, if he's not qualified, you know, if he's got absolutely no interest and he's nothing and he just needs a job, tell him go get a job, you know. But if he really seems to have an interest in it, give it a shot, you know, because I've mentioned, and Jonathan's mentioned it a couple of times, I fired him twice, you know. So, you know, it wasn't working out, you know. And we managed to patch it up and come back together again. But you can always undo it if you've made a mistake, you know, and because he's going to be miserable in it too, you know.
Yeah.
If you're giving him a responsibility and he's not doing the responsibility, then. But if it's something he's really not called to and has no interest in, he or she is going to be miserable as well.
So you're saying err on the side of giving him a shot.
I would think so. You know,
I mean, unless you get evident. outside opinions too. Like you had a board come to you and say this guy is qualified. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, because that normally, if you're in a church too, you're under some kind. You've got some degree of accountability, at least with the other staff. I mean, even if your board isn't engaged enough, you can say, "What do you guys think? What do you?"
Well, and as a company, well, I don't know, as a company, because if you ask your wife, she's probably like, yeah, hire him.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless she doesn't like the job you're doing, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, right,
whatever
right.
The work is. Oh, he's got much more potential than that, you know,
yeah.
Let him go and make it on his own. So, and then if it's, you know, if it's evident, if you're on the outside looking in, I think you better be very graceful because again, you don't know what's going on in the pastor's heart, you know, because the way I first got into ministry, the pastor of the church came to me and knew I was, well, I thought I was getting out of the military in a couple of months. I wasn't, but I did get out. It was a long story. Anyhow, he came to me and he said, when you get out of the military, I want you to come on staff here and I want you to go to college. 14 years later, after me working with him for 14 years, he came to me and he said, you know, when I brought you on staff, the only reason I did that was God specifically spoke to me. I thought you were the most unlikely candidate for ministry I had ever met. You know? So, well, thank you for not telling me that 14 years ago. So what I'm saying is he did it because he specifically heard from the Lord. It wasn't something he felt like he really wanted to do. He didn't even think it was a wise decision. But so what I'm saying is if he's brought his son on, if David has hired Solomon, you better be careful in how you're judging it, you know. It's really kind of none of your business in a sense because we say, well, yeah, I am. I'm paying his salary. No, you are giving to the Lord and to the ministry of the Lord, and then it's up to those that have that handle those funds to give accountability for that. We've talked about this in a previous podcast too, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, that's a big one too because a lot of times a pastor will hand, well, there was a church here locally. The pastor handed over his church to his son, and apparently the son got him into huge amounts of debt really quickly.
Yeah.
And then they had to like run the son off and it created all this chaos and stuff. But you would have thought the guy had proven himself, but then again, it's the, I guess that's where to avoid nepotism, having accountability around you is one of the quickest ways for you to help ignore it, not fall for your biases. Right. Cause I mean, I don't know. Sometimes a father's harder on a son than he needs to be. Like you expect more of your son. Yeah. Other times you're easier. It's just hard to know.
Yeah.
But I think that's where outside view perspectives can help you say, yeah, he's not cutting it, or actually he's destroying what you've built. We've got to remove him.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the other thing too is you're talking about he had prepared himself and he had demonstrated his abilities and his preparation ministry-wise. But leading a church, especially a big church, there's a lot of financial, just flat out financial stuff involved. There's a lot of legal stuff involved that it would be nice if we didn't have to deal with, but you just have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So maybe it was just a financial failure. He just couldn't balance a book, you know?
Well, that, and that's another element of it too, is there may be a certain aspect of a job that you're really good at. And so if the father sees that and can hire the son in that specific role,
right.
That's a hard part a lot of times too, is we want our kids to be everything we are, but they may not be, right? So one of the things I talk about in this book I'm working on as well is the idea that you have to acknowledge how God chooses to bless your child, and it may not be with the gifts you wish they had, but you have what gifts they have, figure out how you can nurture that, and if you can give them a chance to use that in something you've built, that's great. If it doesn't fit at all, don't try and cram them into that mold.
Well, and that's exactly what scripture says. It says train up a child in the way you want him to go. No, wait, that's not what it says. Train up a child in the way he should go, he or she should go. In other words, and then it talks about too, about knowing the condition of your flock. So in other words, you need to know what the gifts and talents are that God has deposited into your kids and point in that direction. And if it's outside the church, if it's, you know, if it's being a forest ranger or something like that, all wonderful. They need to be trained up in the way God has designed them to go. And then they're going to do okay.
Thanks for listening. Please consider sharing this with your friends on the platform of your choice. For more from Joel Malm, visit joelmalm.com. For more from Rick Malm, visit rickmalm.com. Our podcast music was produced by Alex Burleson.